We'll get started with testimony from the Board of Water and Sewer Resources. I'll call the meeting to order when we have a quorum. So, Mr. Daschke.
Okay. Mr. Chairman and members, good afternoon. We've got several items to present to you today that were a result of the work that primarily this committee accomplished last session and were given to our agency to implement. And so we will be walking you through that, in several meetings in the future as well. But we've got two of them today that we want to cover. One is the Soil and Water Conservation District website and demographics information among all the local water management authorities. And the second one is the drainage work group status report. Before we do that, I just wanted to share with you a copy of our annual report that we just completed in your packet. It lists kind of the whole package of those activities and reports that we were responsible for over the past year. And as I mentioned before, we will be covering each of them in meetings upcoming. So without any more commentary, I've got two staff here to present the two items that you had asked to have presented today. And so I'll have Steve Woods, our assistant director, and Al Kane, our chief engineer, come up and do the presentation.
Mr. Woods, welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I have been asked to talk about two topics. One being the demographic information we collected on local governmental officials working with the special purpose districts, and the second being on their drive to get websites up for all the soil and water conservation districts, which is some language attached to the appropriations last session. On the first topic, you have a handout which has a number of graphs on it. We thought that was probably the quickest way to portray what came back in the data from this survey of 91 soil and water conservation districts, 47 watershed districts, and approximately 36 watershed management organizations around the state. There weren't a lot of surprises in the data, however, a few things tended to jump out a bit. Working our way down the sheet, the gender breakdown shows about a 9-to-1 ratio, male to female, with special purpose districts. When you get to the WMOs, you see that that's about a 7-to-1 ratio. That is more of a metropolitan phenomenon. We saw the same sort of heavier amount of women represented on the boards in the metro than we did the outstate areas, but overall it's about a 9-to-1 ratio.
I will call the meeting to order. I don't have my gavel, so.
The second area that we tried to get some information on was the years of service. We did not go with terms with this because they have different lengths of terms depending on type of office that they hold. What we found was surprising. We expected there to be much longer tenure by a number of the board members, which is kind of we anecdotally carried around in our heads. What we saw was about two-thirds of the members on these boards have served 10 years or less, and that fully half have served 5 years or less, which highlighted for us a bit of a need for training, more ongoing training of the board members than we had anticipated finding in the data. The third area that we took a look at was the breakdown by age. And what we found was approximately a quarter of the board members were 50 or younger, and a quarter were 65 or older. Pretty much for all types of government, the median age that served on these boards was in that 51 to 55 year class. The back side of the sheet has the fourth area that we took a look at with the survey, and that was the breakdown of occupation isn't perhaps the best word, but we wanted to know the primary economic sector that they had worked in or did have their business. In the case, we knew that since we had a quarter of the board members that were likely to be of retirement age, we still wanted to know the occupation that tended to shape a lot of their views. So these aren't necessarily current occupations that are represented in these pie charts. We took the breakdown for the occupations from some U.S. Census Bureau classifications, modified slightly, and we saw pretty much representative of the land uses we think that are out there. case in point, with the Soil and Water Conservation District having quite a few people in the agricultural-related industries, and by the time you look at the right-hand pie chart for the Metropolitan Watershed Management Organization, agriculture tends to drop to quite a bit more of a sliver for where their experience had been coming from.
George, if you can hold for just a second, I need to do a little bit with Representative Peterson moves the minutes from February 18th and February 26th. Is there any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. The minutes are approved.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, one of the other areas that we were asked to take a look at a little bit was the election results. And what we were able to pull off the Secretary of State's website, and with a little bit of playing with that data, well, we were able to kind of find out for the county level positions what the percentage was of contested seats were. For example, the county commissioners in the 2006 election cycle, approximately two-thirds of those county commissioner seats had more than one person file for the seat, is what that's showing. And then at the right end of the table, you can see that every single one of the county coroner races, those coroners ran unopposed. In between is the range of the offices shown in the table, which I won't go over each of those one by one.
Mr. Woods, on the SWCD that has 177 seats, and this is for 2006?
Yes.
And only 18 were contested? And of those 18, how many were in the seven county metro area?
I believe approximately half of them, with surprisingly strong showing of contested seats in the metro.
And so what that tells us is almost all these elected officials are not contested. I mean, only 11% are contested statewide.
Yes, that is true, Mr. Chairman.
And do you think that has a bearing on the gender breakdown and the years of service as well, as the lack of contested elections?
Mr. Chairman, it may. We didn't have that rigorous of a survey to get into the reasons for that. We did note that in addition to the ones that weren't contested, there were some that had turnover because the incumbent had not run, and that would affect also the years of service. So of the relative measures, the years of service probably gives us the best indicator of how frequently those positions are turning over.
And back on the years of service, if you take the WMOs out in the metro area, in overall data, that skews the gender breakdown. There's a greater number of women in the WMOs, and the years of service are less on the WMOs. If you look just at the SWCDs, years of service are, and gender seem to stick out a little more. If you take comparing the three types of local units of government.
Mr. Chairman, from a percentage standpoint on years of service, the SWCDs in the out years tend to have a higher percentage of peers, yes. The WMOs, it should be noted, haven't existed for more than about 25 years at the most, and the people who were on the initial startup boards for that largely were different in the... There was more the entrepreneurs getting those set up rather than the people who have done the long hauls on the metro board.
Proceed.
Last comment I guess I would have on the survey was that we found it pretty helpful. We think it's providing a pretty decent snapshot in time of what's out there, and we found that some of the things that we've been carrying around anecdotally weren't as accurate as they could be. I think it's going to affect how much we do for training of new board members. We're currently working both with the Minnesota Association of Watershed Districts and the Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts. We do once a year training of new board members. And it's something that maybe we ought to even be doing a little bit more follow-up in addition to that with the orientation classes that we are reaching. And it's something that I'm pretty sure that our board is pretty interested in conducting the survey periodically. As an aside, we did take a look for other information around the country to see if we could find similar data and came up with not much information. We found approximately 5 other states that were having some sort of portion of this data that they were tracking, and the results that they were getting were pretty similar.
Any questions from members? Mr. Woods, a few years ago, there was a reform of soil and water conservation district law that allowed districts to have elections based on district rather than county-wide or district-wide. And that gave the ability for the local unit of government to decide what to do. How many soil and water conservation districts have, one, reviewed their election procedures, and then, two, have changed them?
Mr. Chairman, this is a question I actually asked of the State Association earlier this week, and I wasn't able to get a firm answer from them. However, we do know that the Board of Water and Soil Resources and the State Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts had jointly sent a letter to all of the 91 Soil and Water Conservation Districts asking them to actively take a look at that option for them. I know from personal experience that at least a half a dozen of them did take active looks at that, and I'm not aware of any that this state that have actually gone to the point where they've redistricted based on population relative to land area. I don't know if you've got something additional.
No, I think we've covered it. I think, you know, we've been encouraging them to look at that as a formal part of their business, and, you know, I think Mr. Wood said we've had feedback from a few that have said they have, none have made that change as part of their district alignment. So we will be looking to try and get some more, you know, real information or data on that over the next year, but we had the letter out, I think, in late October or early November, so it's been a couple of months. But
so given the opportunity, the districts haven't rushed to review, and those that have haven't changed themselves.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's a fair assessment.
Mr. Jaskie and Mr. Woods, when it comes to election time in the metro area, I certainly get calls of who are these folks and who's running and who are they and why are they running and what do they do. And that's in the 7-county metro area. I get calls from Carver County and from Hennepin County and all over, and people wonder who the folks are, and you have tens of thousands of people voting in these elections. And I think when only 11% are contested, and that given the opportunity to maybe seriously look at this and review it and say if something's wrong here and nothing happening, that may require us to get involved in the future and make some additional choices for people. If folks don't change themselves, given the opportunity.
The second topic that I was asked to give some background information on, Mr. Chairman, was the development of websites by the Soil and Water Conservation Districts. General service money, which was appropriated last session, included some rider language, which pretty much said that the district need to get websites up for those who did not have it. At the time the legislation passed, there were less than half of the Soil and Water Districts, so about the low 40s of districts that had their own freestanding websites. As of about a week or two ago, the tabulation we had showed that we had received approximately a couple dozen SWCDs have already got their websites up and online since the end of last session. There are approximately 22, and some phone information I got today leads me to believe there's two more have come online, but approximately 20 SWCDs who still not have a website online. As you can see from the tabulation, a number of those did get small grants to help with website development of approximately $700, and we are tracking them for the five elements, minimum requirements that were included in the rider language. Not all of them that have the websites up have all five elements at this time. They may have websites with quite a bit of additional information, technical information, but where you're seeing the open cells in the spreadsheet just means that they don't have all five yet. One of the things that was helpful in getting that done is the publishing of the SWCD guidebook, which you've all received a copy of, which occurred this fall and winter. We did a similar effort last year for the watershed districts, which helped a lot for showing some of the accomplishments the watershed districts are doing. What we were doing with the grants this year was making sure that the soil and water districts gave us material for a two-page entry for each of the 91 districts, and that this would essentially serve as some good starter material for their website to get them thinking about this as a public relations tool and a way to connect with their stakeholders. Essentially, this fits here as a physical manifestation what's showing up on their website slowly but surely. What we've been strongly encouraging the district is to have that website up and online by June 30, 2008. Even if it doesn't have all five minimum elements down there at that point, we are pushing very hard to have them all up and going by then. One complicating factor with it is that our federal partners at the NRCS have recently been making a number of cutbacks in their computer support, which is unfortunate given that approximately 3-4 years ago the NRCS was pushing hard for the SWCDs to link up with them for better coordination. Well, with the change in the federal position and their increased cost for supporting those positions now, we're seeing a number of the SWCs look to link up with their counties, link up with the National Association of Conservation Districts has some web services, and a few of the districts are continuing their partnership with the NRCS, but they are paying essentially the federal government approximately $3,000 per workstation is where the preliminary numbers are coming in at.
Just with what happens if June 30th comes and districts haven't, don't have a website?
Mr. Chairman, I would be surprised if there weren't a couple that find it unable to make the June 30th deadline because of the NRCS issue or other issues. We have this spreadsheet so that we're tracking them. We will be bringing more pressure to bear on them. The grant agreements that have been written with the districts are for the biennium, and so they say they have it up and running. If push came to shove, they could say, well, we have until the end of the biennium to get this done, and that would be true. But we are pushing very hard to have everything done ahead of time. One of the other things that we've done with the State Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts is co-sponsored a number of training opportunities for the staff. And the general attitude out there is good. Most of them are finding that this is helpful and something that they've kind of needed to be doing. So we don't expect that there's going to be very many people at all that, or very many organizations that fall short of that June 30 deadline.
So as I see Mr. Bonus here, I'm just wondering on watershed districts, on a similar with websites, if how we're doing there with WDs on websites.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Ray Bones, Minnesota Association Watershed District. Pardon me, again, some of you may know, MOD started a program about 10 years ago where we actually supported all watershed districts with the website, with a page off of our website. And since that time, many of them, I'd say a good share of them, have migrated off onto their own websites and developed their own websites. Then we dropped their page off ours and just linked to them. But as far as I know, they're all covered either through MOD or through their own website.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Jaskie and Mr. Kane.
Mr. Chairman, while Mr. Kane's coming up here, I just wanted to let you know, he's going to give an overview of the status of the drainage work group and cover and review the statute changes and the outcomes of that that occurred last session. And, you know, there's obviously many members of that group that are not here today, but hopefully he can speak on their behalf as well.
Mr. Kane.
Mr. Chairman, members, Al Kane, Chief Engineer for the Board of Water and Soil Resources. In your packet is a PowerPoint printout, blue headers on them, and we'll work from that. I wanted to start out just with answering the question of why is there a drainage work group? And I think, as you probably are all well aware, too, that drainage is critical for not just agriculture, but also for roads and cities. We know that there is an increasing priority for water quality. Impaired waters lists and PMDLs include the channelized streams and ditches, a significant priority for our state. And as many of you who have been involved with drainage in one way or another are aware, drainage issues are often complex, and it does require a broad-based consensus to support policy change without there being controversy. And drainage infrastructure, of which the total number of miles of channelized streams and ditches in the state is around 21,000. There's a lot of drainage infrastructure out there. That's not counting road ditches, of course, but it is a big infrastructure, of which does provide opportunity for multi-purpose water management. On page 2, you see a map of the upper Midwest that shows just ag land that benefits from improved drainage. This is a map that does show that in Minnesota, where it's red and orange, those are lands where there is a substantial benefit from improved drainage, and in fact, that's where the majority of the ditches and tile is located in Minnesota. It's in the Red River Basin, Glacier Lake Agassiz area, and also primarily in the Des Moines lobe of the last glaciation, where the soils are and topography is conducive to drainage being beneficial. Slide 4 is the definition of all of the varied members of the drainage work group. Note that it is a very diverse group. We have many dedicated members who have attended a number of meetings, many meetings over the last 2 years, and it continues to be a meeting again this past year, 2007. Slide 5 just talks about the fact that the drainage work group was an outgrowth of the public drainage ditch buffer study, which the legislature had requested of Bowser to produce back in 2005. It was published in February of 2006. The drainage work group then evolved, if you will, from that, and it is a group that meets voluntarily. It has been facilitated by Bowser staff since the inception through the public drainage ditch buffer study. And its purpose, as stated by members, is to address issues and opportunities related to drainage and to work together to develop consensus recommendations in that regard. You'll see on the bottom of page 3, slide 6, that is the cover of this report that is available on the Bowser website. Note at the bottom of that slide the address for it. And so it was the drainage work group was the study work group for that report back in 2005-2006. And then it had recommendations in the public drainage ditch buffer study to continue to meet. There were a number of other recommendations about potential modifications, clarifications of drainage law, about some other topics, which you'll see listed in the list on the next page, on page 4, of some of the recommendations that came out of the drainage work group during calendar year 2007, or 2006 rather. I'll run through just a brief list of those. There were drainage law recommendations, clarifications of drainage law, and there were also information and assistance recommendations for management of drainage infrastructure. The first bullet under drainage law recommendations is clarifying the point of beginning for measuring buffer strips that are required by Section 103E021, which does require one-rod minimum buffer strips along drainage ditches when viewers are appointed. And That includes the establishment of a system, improvement of a drainage system, and also certain repairs that require additional right-of-way for the drainage system. They also appoint viewers and therefore trip the requirements of 103E021. Another recommendation that came out of the drainage work group was to allow various perennial vegetation on buffer strips. The previous law read as grass, and in some instances it makes sense for the drainage or for the drainage authority to allow other than just grass as perennial vegetation. I will show you an example of that in a minute. Enabling the incremental establishment of buffer strips and site inlet controls using maintenance procedures. That was a proactive recommendation of the work group to try to promote buffer strips where they're most needed and also where there's opportunity to partner with other programs to install them. I will also show you examples of that. Clarifying the responsibility of drainage systems to restore adjacent vegetation or structural conservation practices that might be impacted by a drainage project. There were provisions in the law prior to the recommendations of the work group, but it appeared that they were being interpreted somewhat differently across the state, so this was an opportunity and an objective to help clarify that so there was consistent restoration, if you will, of those practices that they were impacted by a drainage system project. And the last bullet on slide 7, require drainage inspection at least every 5 years and annually where there is a violation of section 103E021, the buffer strip requirement. There was in drainage law prior to this change a requirement for regular inspection, and the work group recommended that be more definitive, if you will, that at least every 5 years, and if there is a violation identified, then do it annually until that violation is resolved. The other recommendations on slide 8, page 4, that the work group put forth were in regard to information and assistance to drainage authorities to help. First of all, the first bullet is to drainage records modernization, recognizing that many of the drainage records are very old and fragile, if you will, in terms of their material. And the work group believes that we should develop guidelines that are based upon the experience of those drainage authorities who have conducted and developed modern records to date. That is an effort that's ongoing. We'll talk a bit more about that. Providing more cost share for records modernization. We have in the past provided that cost share through a local water management challenge grant. We'll look a bit more at that as well. Creating a state interagency drainage assistance team. And again, I've got a slide that gives you a little bit more detail about that in a minute. Also updating the Minnesota Public Drainage Manual, which was first published in 1991. It was an interagency and inter-stakeholder effort to develop that public drainage manual. It has not been updated since 1991. So it was a recommendation of the work group to update the manual and as well to include a section on drainage system best management practices. And also they recommended that Bowser continue to facilitate the drainage work group, which in fact we have done since their development for the buffer study. In 2007 legislative session, in the House, Representative Hansen did chief author a bill to implement the drainage work group recommendations, and in the Senate, Senator Dan Sparks also co-authored a bill. The final implementation then was through the omnibus Environment, Natural Resources, Energy, and Commerce bill, and we'll take a look now just at some of those particular highlights or details of some of the law changes that were made to give you a flavor of that. This point of beginning for measuring required buffer strips on slide 10, the previous statute language said the top edge of the channel of the ditch. The ditch has changed over time because they may be improved and therefore side slopes flattened, for example, to make them more stable. And it wasn't perfectly clear where you measured from. Was it where the top edge of the ditch was when it was first constructed, or did that point in space move with time? So the language that was adopted and recommended by the work group and then adopted by the legislature is the top edge of the constructed channel resulting from the proceeding. Therefore, it defines where and when. So if a ditch side slope, for example, is changed as shown on the drawing there, then that top edge of the constructed channel also changes with time. Allowing various perennial vegetation, the picture that I have there is actually from Northern Minnesota. There are other types of examples, but this is the one that I had available. The primary point that was being, or for this recommendation from the work group, was that if, for example, in the ditch in the picture, an improvement was to be done, or something else that tripped the trigger for a buffer strip requirement, it may not make any sense to go rip existing perennial vegetation out to plant grass. And so this change tried to provide for whatever kind of perennial vegetation the drainage authority believes to be appropriate and that won't impede the future maintenance of the ditch, they can approve. A related legislative addition, as you note on the bottom of slide 11, is that preference should be given to the planting of native species of a local ecotype. The legislature had inserted that addition to try to again promote native vegetation, of which you will hear a bit more about in one of the other programs the legislature had given us to implement this year. Slide 12, enabling an incremental buffer strip where needed. This was, I think, a proactive, if you will, recommendation from the work group to allow buffer strips not just where the appointing of viewers tripped the trigger, but also where the drainage authority believed they were needed or where there was opportunity to install them. So it uses repair procedures, which is a simpler way, if you will, for drainage authorities to implement projects than, say, an improvement or other types of procedures. It does pay permanent right-of-way costs for that buffer strip, buying that right-of-way from the landowner. It does not require the redetermination of benefits. That was a significant issue in terms of making this practical for drainage authorities to implement on an incremental basis. Redetermination of benefits for an entire system can be quite expensive, and so this provision allows them not to have to redetermine, but they do determine the damages and pay for that additional right-of-way. And it requires a buffer strip of one rod, 16 and a half feet in width, which is consistent then with 103.021 subdivision 1 requirement. Slide 13 on page 7 shows an example of an opportunity to implement incremental buffer strips. This is a site where a landowner had put I believe that's about a 66-foot buffer strip on both sides through the CRP program, Conservation Reserve Program, administered by the Farm Service Agency, USDA. And this is an example of if a landowner decides to put a land along a public drainage ditch into a CRP, for example, the drainage authority now, through this new subdivision 6 of 021, section 021, can go in there and buy a permanent right-of-way on top of that CRP, which would be expected to be at a lower cost for the drainage system, because the landowner has already committed that land to perennial vegetation through CRP. And in that case, then the landowner would maintain that perennial vegetation during the life of the CRP contract, and when that's over, the permanent buffer strip purchased by the drainage system would then be responsible for that buffer strip. As part of that incremental implementation on slide 14, site inlet controls are also part of that. This slide just shows an example of where a site inlet control could be very beneficial for erosion control. And the next slide shows an example of a type of site inlet control that is an inlet pipe with a riser. And what that does then is prevent that water flow across the bank and into the ditch and the associated erosion. It also provides for temporary ponding of runoff on the field, on the edge of the field, and therefore reduces the peak flow into the ditch. And that also helps to trap sediment to reduce turbidity and phosphorus. So there are some other significant water quality benefits of these site inlet controls. The drainage work group determined that this incremental establishment provision should also enable them to do this sort of work. A legislative addition on slide 16 regarding buffer strips is annual reporting. This was something discussed by the drainage work group. They didn't recommend reporting, but they did recommend that it be discussed amongst themselves. And what the legislature put forth in along with the drainage work group recommendations are these four requirements for the number and types of actions appointing viewers, which would trip the trigger for buffer strips, the miles of buffer strips established, number of inspections conducted, and number of violations and enforcement actions. And that's intended to be implemented starting in calendar year 2008. Another one of the information and assistance types of recommendations of the work group were drainage records preservation and modernization, particularly developing guidelines. And there was funding provided then by the legislature for this. Just a little bit of history. Between 1997 and the current time, the Local Water Management Challenge Grant Program has given out 24 cost-share grants for drainage records modernization or drainage inventories. They've averaged $25,000 each, and those have a minimum one-to-one match requirement. The intent then is for the additional these guidelines to help steer then the implementation of additional records modernization. And the legislature had also appropriated some funding for FY09 for additional cost share to do that. The Minnesota State University Mankato is currently working with us to develop those guidelines, and they will be used then for FY09. Another assistance recommendation of the drainage work group was the drainage assistance team. The intent is for it to be an interagency team that brings together the expertise of different state agencies and U of M to help promote and assist multi-purpose projects involving drainage infrastructure. It's also to help coordinate access to program partnerships. Again, there are conservation programs that potentially can partner with drainage authorities to implement multi-purpose projects. And this team will also provide information, education, technical assistance to drainage authorities and their technical advisors. This team is also intended to help update the Minnesota Public Drainage Manual. And as I noted on the bottom, Bowser DNR, MPCA, MDA will be dedicating staff time and coordinate with the University of Minnesota to help make this team be valuable to drainage authorities. Two related programs that the legislature directed to the Board of Water and Soil Resources this past year. One is the Native Buffer Cost Share Program for erosion control, water quality within 8 ecotype regions of Minnesota. Those areas involve 74 SWCDs. We do have that program putting funding out there at this time to identify projects. And we're also looking to use some of that cost share program in southeast Minnesota as part of the flood response, particularly in partnership with RIM conservation easement. Another project that was directed to Bowser is this Ag Watershed Restoration Project. And that one is to develop a framework for surface water quality restoration in primarily agricultural watersheds. A request for proposals was put out, as a matter of fact, earlier this week on Monday. For phase one, that phase one is to identify about 3 to 5 project sub-watersheds and local sponsors across the state, trying to have representative landscapes, representative types of drainage systems within Minnesota. And we do intend to coordinate with TMDL and related studies so that we're piggybacking, we're not duplicating or starting from scratch. Phase two will be the modeling and associated studies and reporting, and phase three will be a BMP implementation phase. So that's a new program getting off the ground at this time. And lastly, slide number 20 there, the drainage work group, the calendar year 2007-2008 discussion topic. We've been meeting again since June of 2007. We don't meet every month, but we have met several times since last summer. And there's two more sections of drainage law that the work group will be putting forth some recommendations to clarify. Those include 103E227, which is impounding and diversion of drainage system waters. That section is used substantially for wetland restoration projects. And when it was written, it probably didn't envision the way it's used for rerouting of systems. And also cost sharing for multiple purposes. So there will be some recommendations to help clarify that. Section 805 is the removal of property from and partial abandonment of a drainage system. There's two functions of that section of drainage law, and the way it is written has been found to be rather confusing to drainage authority. So the purpose of the work group for this one is to help clarify that, not intending to change the intent at all. It's really purely for clarification. The rural-urban ditches, another topic that we have discussed this past fall, where we did get a number of folks in to review the experience to date with 103E812, the transfer of all or part of a drainage system. That was a relatively new section of drainage law, early 2000s, put in place. So we're trying to learn about what is and isn't maybe working with it. And I can report to you that I think the experience that we heard about was quite positive, that in fact it has been used. Not extensively to date, but significantly, and it appears that it is beneficial. Coordination of drainage authority between counties and watershed districts. Again, where there are watershed districts, certain types of proceedings automatically convert that system over to a watershed district authority. But therefore, there are coordination issues, and that's something the work group just wanted to talk about. See if there are any things that could be enhanced. Adjusting ditch assessments for land use change. They're trying to look at if there's a way to do incremental adjustments to benefits and assessments. And water quality use classifications in public ditches. One of the issues that's raised as part of impaired waters and PMDL. The last page in this handout is a summary that I had developed for the drainage work group last summer. It was on August 1st that the changes to drainage law that the work group had recommended and the legislature had enacted became effective on 8-1-07. And this was a summary then of all of those, both drainage work group proposed and legislatively implemented.
Thank you, Mr. King. So the drainage work group does not have any recommendations for legislative action this year.
Mr. Chairman, members, the consensus of the work group was that we would not try to rush through what they were working on to try to get them into recommendations for legislature this year, but we do expect that it will be putting forth recommendations next year, which may include the ones we've worked on to date and some additional ones if they determine that there are other recommendations they'd like to make.
On the local water management challenge grants for the drainage records, how much was that appropriation?
$500,000, Mr. Chairman, for FY09.
And Mr. Dashby, has the agency prepared any recommendations for dealing with the budget deficit? Are there recommendations forthcoming, or do we need another meeting?
There will be recommendations forthcoming, but I am not privy to what they are yet, but I don't believe these would be in there because my understanding is they were seeking base level funded items, and this one was not in that category.
I would ask other members for questions, but there's multiple committees meeting. I know that there's a lot of work that he's done in this game, and people have put a lot of time in, and the stick-to-it nature of people sticking with this is important, that, you know, that people are involved. And I know there's some folks in the audience who've been on these, and I would like to give them the opportunity just to comment on the drainage if they want to. And you can say that, Mr. Kane. I think they're only going to say good things, but I'm not sure.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Chris Raddatz with Minnesota Farm Bureau. Just very briefly, I think the drainage work group has been very beneficial. It's really kind of an informal group. We're not have a lot of requirements and statute of who's on it, who isn't on it. So it's allowed the group to operate, I think, in a very open manner. People who are interested can come to the table, bring their concerns. I know from my perspective, from the farmer perspective, we've learned some of the concerns that the drainage authorities have, and vice versa, hopefully. So I hope that we continue to meet as needed. Again, we don't have to meet every month. It's more as an as needed basis. And I think as we look into the future, some years there may be a lot of issues. We kind of came together over the ditch buffer study, and I think we were able to come up with some solutions that could work and avoided a lot of messy committee time here at the Capitol. So again, I think it works, and I know Mr. Kane has an engineering background, but he's a great facilitator also. So we continue to hopefully work with him, and I think we probably sponsored all the meetings in our office, so it's very convenient also.
And we appreciate that.
Thank you.
Mr. Bowen. Mr. Chairman, I'm members of the committee, Ray Bowen, Minnesota Association Watershed District. I would just say, me too. I think this has been a fantastic idea. It's worked extremely well, and as Mr. Adams said, it's informal, and sometimes I tell you, so many folks get started talking, they're way over my head. So we're all learning too in that process. But it is a very, very complicated issue, and I think everybody now has a better appreciation for, at least from my standpoint, what drainage authorities really face out there too, and the issues that we face every day. So we are committed to keep going on it as long as need be, and we think it's an excellent way to deal with these issues.
And how are your members with the changes that we did make in drainage law? Any feedback there as implementation is starting?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, no. There were a few questions when we first laid out the recommendations, but I think everybody was pretty happy and pleased with the changes that were made. I mean, I didn't get any negative feedback anyway.
Okay. Mr. Manzel?
No questions.
Thank you.
Thank you. The counties have any comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Anna Lee Garlitz with the Association of Minnesota Counties. As Mr. Bowen said, or maybe I can say me three for that, we have really enjoyed being able to work and talk with everything out in the open so that, as it noted, it's not a fight here at the Capitol. It's been good to get it all out there. We've all learned a lot. And I think that having everybody at the table, and in particular Commissioner Howlett-Metz from Kandy, Ojai County, has been a wonderful person for us and for me to have there from his knowledge, and then he's been able to bring it back to AMC to inform all the rest of the commissioners about what's going on, keep everybody in the loop, and so that we're all on the same page to go forward. So we are also committed to working with the group as we go forward to look at these other issues.
Yes, thank you. We do meet with our peers around in other states and talk with folks, and I've made available both the buffer study and changes to law, and there's some interest from other states in what's happening. I don't know if anybody contacted Bowser or not, but I found that other states have grappled with drainage law, an old law, and trying to find the time to connect with it. And Representative Manzel has drainage areas up in his district, and
yeah.
His whole district.
Yeah, we're draining everything.
I just want to thank the folks who've been working on this, because it is difficult, and it's somewhat dry, even though it's a wet topic. But it's very important. And when we deal with these impaired waters and water quality and now more water quantity issues, this, I think, is a model we can use for dealing with some of the other stuff. So, any final words, Mr. Kent?
Mr. Chairman, members, again, I think on behalf of Bowser, we're pleased to serve as a facilitator, and we're very pleased with the dedication of all of the stakeholders who have been meeting with the drainage work group and continue to come to the table.
Thank you. Mr. Jackson, any final words? We are going to meet again next Tuesday. I apologize for kind of the revolving rooms. I don't think we've met in this room before, so it's kind of...
Mr. Chair, and I certainly apologize to all the presenters for not being able to be here for the entire presentation, but you know the way things are around here. So I appreciate your work.
Thank you. Well, meeting adjourned.